Welcome to Adult Siblings Versus, a podcast where a grown-ass brother and sister put aside their childhood rivalry in order to review nostalgic pieces of pop culture. I'm your co-host, Jason S. Leverett.
And I'm your other co-host, Ariel Leverett.
Ariel, I got a personal question. Well, it's personal about me, but your view of me, I guess. So it's like personal to you, but mostly personal to me. Anyway, I'm putting myself out here. When we were kids, do you remember just how amazingly bad a temper I had?
Yes, I do remember your temper.
Okay. I was hoping you were going to say no. I was hoping you were like, what? No, you're the sweetest brother ever.
I mean, you were often the sweetest brother ever, but you also had a temper.
I don't believe it. Yeah, I got into, when I got towards the end of middle school, I got into fights all the time for several years in various places. The first week of high school, which is notorious for its zero tolerance on fighting, literally the first week I slammed someone against the wall by the throat when they were picking on me too much.
Right on, right on.
And that could have gone really badly. But guess what? That guy did not mess with me ever again. And then he got kicked out for fighting like the next year.
Hey, fuck around and find out.
Anyway, I bring this all up because I found myself feeling a little more, let's say, relating to the main character of today's movie than I would have liked to have thought until I rewatched it. But we're watching The Water Boy today, which was Adam Sandler film. It's one of, I'd say, two films that turned him from, you know, SNL guy who happens to make movies to legitimate movie star.
You know, I really feel you with this. I mean, I found myself relating to Steve the Donkey more than I care to. And, you know, I had to kind of make some peace with that, just me and Steve.
Are you bringing that? Are you saying it that way in order to bring things a little up so it doesn't get too dark in this podcast? Or do you actively relate to Steve, whose main contribution to the film was playing badminton with Mama for a little bit?
Column A, column B, my bro.
Do you play badminton with our mom sometimes?
I guess it technically would be backyard wiffle golf.
Okay. Well, hey, we're going to talk about Waterboy. This is a weird movie because I've always been a defender of this film. Like, when Adam Sandler movies come up, this movie almost never comes up as, like, the ones that people like. People will say Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison significantly more, especially Billy Madison. People love Billy Madison, or at least love to pretend they love Billy Madison.
Yeah, I don't get the love of Billy Madison, but whatever. We're not talking about that.
You know, I'm just saying that Waterboy kind of gets forgotten about or disregarded. I often find myself defending it, but there is some aspects of it that you have to wonder, is this movie worth defending? Is this movie an uplifting message, or is it actually just making fun of a specific type of person? Mm-hmm. And that's a deeper question than I was necessarily thinking we get into today, but it's a heck of a lot deeper than anything that happens in this movie, so I guess it's just as well. But we're going to try to talk about that and maybe kind of talk about it in lightly. Like, I don't want to be in a situation where we're speaking out of turn, because some topics it's not really for us to speak on in the way that I wouldn't want, like a podcast full of white guys talking about like the racial realities of the film Glory. Not that The Waterboy should be compared to Glory. It's Waterboy is clearly the more sophisticated of the two. Just joking. just joking, Denzel. Don't get mad. But we'll try to talk about it a bit, as much as we can. Before we get into that, as always, want to give us a shout, complain about us talking on topics that we haven't been talking about. You know, or make a request about movies that we may or may not actually bother doing, you can email us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at adultversus on Twitter, and we can reach us on Facebook. Also, please take in mind that the best way to help the podcast grow is to tell your friends. Word of mouth is the easiest and best way to help that out. But other ways would also include making sure that you are giving us them 5 stars or equivalent reviews on your podcatcher of choices. That tricks the algorithm into thinking we're popular and then puts us in front of new people more regularly. And I don't mean to brag, but no one has said anything racist or sexist about us in these reviews yet. So, woo. I'm doing pretty good.
Hey.
So, Ariel, The Waterboy was a very popular movie in our household, like, for sure. One of the more popular ones. If not the most popular one, now that I think about it. I think we watched that a ton between you, me, and our mom.
Definitely one of the most quoted movies. Like, I had not remembered how many times we would just randomly quote this movie in everyday conversation.
So from your point of view, what's your memories and nostalgia for this film?
I mean, beyond the fact that, like, we just watched it a lot. And I feel like the other Adam Sandler movie that I really liked was Big Daddy. But of, like, the two movies, you know, Waterboy was the one that, like, other people would be more willing to watch. And so, like, I feel that also, like, helped this be the more popular movie in the household, because no one really felt like watching Big Daddy. But everyone is always saying to be okay, and I'm down for some Waterboy. I feel like it was one of those, you can't decide on what to watch, but everyone's pretty okay with this one kind of thing, you know? Like, you always have those movies that are kind of, like, neutral territory movies, and everyone's like, all right, we can watch this. This will be a nothing movie that we can all just, like, enjoy. Like, I feel like that's kind of where Waterboy was.
I'm actually kind of surprised because, A, when you said two Adam Sandler movies, I was certain you were going to say Happy Gilmore.
I think I personally liked Big Daddy more than Happy Gilmore. I think as far as movies that I liked more than you, like, I feel like we were more on the same page with Happy Gilmore, but I think I was the one who liked Big Daddy as opposed to other people who didn't
I don't think I fully understood that you liked Big Daddy so much. I actually don't like Big Daddy.
I don't know my opinion on it now. I have not watched it in over a decade more. So, like, I don't. But I liked it when it was new.
I mean, like, I haven't watched it recently at all. It's one of two movies that I know for sure Jon Stewart is in.
That's true. That's like true.
This movie and then Death to Smoochie.
Yeah, Jon Stewart would be like, row, I have a son.
Yeah, he's not in either movie a ton, especially Big Daddy. I think he's, like, basically only in two scenes, right? Like, in the beginning and in the end.
Yeah, basically. But
yeah, so it's kind of surprising there. Well, Waterboy is definitely my favorite, or was my favorite, Adam Sandler movie. I have not watched Uncut Gems, which I've heard nothing but amazing things about.
It sounds like it'll be too stressful for me. I literally can't handle anything nowadays. Like, anything that is, like, borderline, like, I think this might stress you out. I'm like, no, fucking no, I don't want it.
I don't know. I feel like if I had that sort of mindset, then I would never have watched the Nicole Kidman masterpiece that was Destroyer, which is a movie I love and no one else seems to love.
I don't even know what that is, I don't think.
Oh, that is unsurprising. But this is not the Nicole Kidman podcast, although, I mean, we could make the Nicole Kidman podcast. I'm not saying we can't. We are talking about Adam Sandler. I loved this movie. This is the only movie of Adam Sandler's that I felt like I loved with all my heart. Because even movies that I liked, like, I liked Happy Gilmore, but I didn't love Happy Gilmore. And the reason I didn't like the hell of Happy Gilmore is the same reason I don't love Big Daddy, is that a lot of his movies just kind of feel like he's just playing the same guy in just different scenarios. Sometimes, like, maybe the volume is higher or lower, depending on what year it is, I guess. But Waterboy actively was like one of the only Adam Sandler film that I could think of where he didn't actually feel like it's just the Adam Sandler character in that wacky new situation. And then something else that I heard about the pre-production of this film kind of, I think, adds to a little bit of it, but I'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, actually, I did want to bring up some of Adam Sandler's movies.
You know, if only he had made an opera singer movie, you know.
Opera Man? Oh, man.
if only be a proper character.
I would have watched that.
I'm just imagining, like, the opening credits has Opera Singer by Cake going. It would be great.
All right, so Airheads. But he wasn't really the star of that, right? It also had Brendan Fraser and Steve Buscemi.
We really need to... We need to have a Brendan Fraser like stint. We need to like bust through like multiple Brendan Fraser movies. But
you know, here's a weird thing that I might get a little flack on or flack from maybe, but Hollywood is notorious for chewing up and spitting out like young actresses as they get into the system. I think Brendan Fraser might have been a rare example of the male actor that gets that situation happen to him.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas, like, he was like this pretty big name for a number of years, and then he gets just his body just absolutely wrecked making those Mummy movies, and then he gets sexually harassed and then blacklisted for years, and everyone's just like, oh, he's out of Hollywood. And then he finally gets to come back to Hollywood, and then everyone just immediately starts body shaming him.
Yeah, absolute bullshit. He's amazing. Also, great in Doom Patrol.
Yeah, yeah. I only saw very limited amount of Doom Patrol. But what I've seen of it, I really liked. All right, anyway. We talked about Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore. I'm skipping the next movie. Big Daddy. Yeah, Lil Nicky hated that movie. I absolutely did not enjoy it.
Oh, don't forget about The Wedding Singer.
I skipped it on purpose.
Oh.
Because I'm coming back.
Oh, gotcha.
Didn't see Punch Drunk Love. Mr. Deeds. Didn't like Mr. Deeds.
That definitely fits into your category of Adam Sandler being a variation of himself in a different situation.
Same as that. Same thing with Anger Management.
Which I believe I saw like once, but I do not remember it at all.
I saw it once and I hated it. That's why I didn't watch it again. And then, like, 51st Dates, which I may have watched some of it, but I know how it ends, and it's one of the, like, most depressing romantic comedies, like, I've ever heard of, and I just don't care for it. The Longest Yards, the Longest Yard remake that he's in, that's fine. I'm more intrigued and confused by Terry Crews in that movie than anything else.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about that one either, really.
The main thing I remember about that
football.
The main thing I remember that movie is that I believe that's the one with Chris Rock is also in it. There's another football movie that involves prison that's out there that I sometimes I think it might involve Juvie. I'm pretty sure this one has Chris Rock. But the main thing I remember about this movie is that Terry Crews plays an inmate that can smuggle anything. And this movie is super serious for the most part. It's like a comedic serious. But Terry Crews' character is a fucking cartoon character in this. Mm-hmm. At some point, he starts dancing around and he takes out McDonald's cheeseburgers out of nowhere. Those and I was like, it's not easy being cheesy. And it's like, the fuck is... This is bad, but also... amazing.
Wow. I really don't remember it.
Anyway, these are just the movies that I remember watching. There's like a lot more since then that I just haven't watched too much. Funny People, which also doesn't feel like an Adam Sandler movie. It feels like a Judd Apatow movie, which is because it's a Judd Apatow movie.
I remember going like, oh, I'll watch this. And then I never did. I guess it wasn't like streaming anywhere that I had, and I was just like, I'll watch Funny People, and then just like never actually did.
I mean, it's got Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen is usually pretty funny, and Leslie Mann is like an underappreciated like treasure.
Yeah, I had the intention of watching it because I like the cast, but yeah, I don't know. It never happened.
No, it's just I'm just kind of ranting about like how all his movies are kind of not the same, but it just feels like it's the same premise. You take Adam Sandler, who is, you know, kind of a wacky guy in a kind of a mundane scenario, and then you see the wackiness happen that he causes. He's causing all this chaos, blah, 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 blah. But since you mentioned The Wedding Singer, I was going to skip it because I wanted to bring it up for something else. But since you brought up The Wedding Singer, I actually never saw The Wedding Singer, so I actually don't know anything about it.
Oh, that's interesting. I think he is a little bit more of a different character. I don't think it's as much as unique as his character in Waterboy, but definitely a bit more different from a lot of his other movies. I don't remember the first time I saw Wedding Singer, but I did like it, and I feel like I've seen it more than once.
So I'm not sure if you could tell, I brought a lot of this up because I don't have a lot to talk about with the background of the film, only a little bit.
But it is kind of crazy that kind of the movies around this time. I mean, this really was like the era of Adam Sandler, like the late 90s to early 2000s, where he was cranking these movies out.
I'm going to get to my theory as to why that's the case. But yeah, he had just movies after movie coming right after the other from like, I would even say like through the early 2000s. And the early 2000s is when people start kind of turning on, I'm not interested, I'm sorry, early 2010s. Early 2020s when people starting to turn on things. But then he had the Hotel Transylvania franchise, which usually gets pretty good response. And then
I didn't know that had anything to do with him.
He's Dracula.
I did not know. Never seen one. I did not even know
who's Dad in that didn't cast. Make you watch it, huh? Dad made me watch it. So... good for you. Good. God bless you.
I do spend a lot of time just in my room, so maybe that's why I ended up avoiding that.
Hotel Transylvania is fine. That's the only one I've seen. It's fine. It's directed by. I always get two specific cartoon directors confused. So it's directed by Genndy Tartakovsky, who has done a lot of things that I loved. Including Dexter's Laboratory, Samurai Jack, the original Star Wars Clone Wars cartoon.
Yeah.
And the best thing to never get renewed for a second season, Symbiotic Titan. So it's fine. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about this movie. And I don't have a ton, like I said, I don't have a ton to talk about, but I'll try to get through it. So The Waterboy is a 1998 film. It's directed by Frank Corici. I'm assuming that's how that's pronounced. I'm learning how Italian names are pronounced lately. Written by Tim Herlihy and also Adam Sandler. This movie had a budget of $23 million and ended up grossing $190 million, which is obviously a pretty big hit. Now, here's where I want to talk about The Wedding Singer. So, The Wedding Singer also came out in 1998. It came out earlier in the year.
Right.
When I say that these are the two movies that kind of changed his career, it is kind of more like The Wedding Singer was when everybody kind of changed their opinion, or at least started to change maybe their opinion of him as an actor, and then Waterboy kind of confirmed it, because The Wedding Singer, a film that also had Drew Barrymore in that, which she was kind of she was having her own moment in the late 90s.
Yes.
But that movie was 18 million, made 123 million. So that plus this movie has cemented Adam Sandler as a star. Like you were saying, that he was having a big moment in the late 90s or the 2000s. It's because of this. Yeah. These two relatively low budget movies, low budget comedies, making that much money in 1 year is pretty unorthodox for someone whose last two movies, I think it was like they made 40 and 20 million respectively, something like that. Mm. So it's a pretty big jump. So 1998 was basically Adam Sandler's year, and he pretty much owes his extensive career and his crazy deal with Netflix that lets him make like all the movies he wants, all because of the success of those two movies. It is really kind of funny that I haven't in fact seen The Wedding Singer, because it seems like it's actually a pretty important part in movie history as far as he goes. Anywho,
yeah, I from my memory, like, it's a good watch. I maybe if I see it streaming on something, I might watch it again, see if I still like it.
Now, this movie is not based on an SNL skit, but it's probably at least very loosely inspired by one of Adam Sandler's characters on SNL, a character called Canteen Boy, who has a lot of similar mannerisms and has a lot of, like, you know, he likes water, he gets bullied, there's apparently a lot of things kind of crossover, but he's not necessarily, like, this is not, like, Nia the Roxbury or...
Right.
Or, McGruber, right? This is not an SNL film at all. But this film was written to be a counterbalance to, at the very least, Happy Gilmore, but possibly also Billy Madison as well, where Happy Gilmore was, let's take Adam Sandler's wacky, out-of-place character and put him in a situation that creates comedy, but nothing funny happens when Happy is not on screen, basically.
Mm.
Where Waterboy, the whole world is fucking wacky.
Yeah, it's a weird environment for sure.
Yeah, so the whole point is that Sandler doesn't have the pressure of being the only funny aspect of the film. This is it lets him be able to maybe do a bit more acting, so to speak, do a bit more character work while the world around him is actually. And in fact, if this character was in a bubble, I actually would think that the Waterboy character Bobby would actually not be that funny. He'd just be more more heartwarming in most spots.
Mm.
Like if he was just like, this is just a movie about a guy who likes, he was a water boy for a major football team in the college world, and no one tortured him. It'd probably just be a pretty low-key mundane movie about a guy who loves his mom. Maybe trying to balance his love for his mom and his love for his childhood friend. Maybe that could have been Adam Sandler's Oscar. Oscar. Anyway, no, it's a wacky, crazy world where Colonel Sanders is a professor. that's kind of it. The only other thing that I want to mention is just that Kathy Bates somehow got attached to this film. And even the people who made this film are shocked that they got Kathy Bates. And Kathy Bates
good.
Is...
It's good that they acknowledge how crazy that is.
Kathy Bates is also a little surprised that she was there, because Kathy Bates literally threw the script into the trash can when she got it. And my understanding is that her niece or somebody found it in the trash and said, hey, you do realize that Adam Sandler's attached to this. I think you should give it a shot. And I guess he was like, okay, I guess so. But yeah, this is kind of funny.
Get that money, Kathy Bates. Do what you want.
Yeah. All right, Ariel, I think it's time we move on. So I started watching this film, and then I suddenly had a bunch of flashbacks towards my school days. And the next thing I know, I was surrounded by this blood. Don't know whose blood. Don't know where it came from. But 3 days had passed.
It's weird.
So
Moon Knight situation.
Yeah, so could you kind of remind everybody, you know, what happened since all I see is red.
So the movie takes place in the great state of Louisiana. It starts off with a high-profile college football team. You see Bobby Boucher, who is the team's water boy. He is getting bullied by the players. They're just being dicks. They have the utmost, high technology water over there. It's pretty amazing. But the coach is also a dick, and he's like, why is this guy still around? Get rid of him. And, like, Bobby has apparently, you know, been the water boy for this team since he was a kid. But he gets fired just kind of for existing. And it's been his whole life, and he's very sad. He goes back home. You see that Kathy Bates is his mom, and she's overprotective. And he decides he's going to try to get a new water boy job, finds another college team to be the water boy for. It's a shittier team, really not doing well. And the coach is kind of, he's got a lot going on. He starts doing his water boy duties, gets picked on again, but this time he kind of snaps and he tackles one of the players, and he turns out he's super good. And the coach, Coach Klein, is like, I think we might be able to use this. And he kind of channels his anger and has him join the team. And things actually start looking up because the team that was doing so poorly starts to win. He starts going to college. He has the girl that he has liked since childhood hanging out with him. That's pretty cool, you know, between whatever illegal things that she's doing. But he's hiding this from his mom, and also the rival team that, like, dropped him finds out that he's doing this stuff, and, you know, dicks are gonna dick. And they kind of get in the way of him playing, and the fact that he doesn't actually have a high school diploma, his mom finds out and is all mad, everything, you know, kind of falls apart. But, you know, it's a comedy, so they all come back together, and he gets to play the final game, and he wins, everyone's happy, tra-la-la.
So, I think the first thing that has to be said about this movie is just, it's a lot of acting talent here. It's like, this is some pretty big names that pop up.
That is true, that is true.
Like, obviously, Kathy Bates, but also, you know, Henry Winkler is in this.
And yeah.
And I was wondering, because Henry Winkler's, like, he's, I know that Happy Days was a sitcom, right? So I'm not saying he's a stranger to comedy, but I really feel like he's, he had kind of like a career renaissance as this being like this super comedic, like, character actor showing up in a bunch of things. And I'm wondering if this is where that started, because I actually can't think of too many things that he was in prior to this. But I can think of a bunch of stuff after this.
I think you might be right. I didn't really look this up, but, like, yeah, when I think of comedic things that he was in that people enjoy, yeah, you're right. Like, it is pretty much after this. It's interesting. I wonder what he was up to, really, in the 90s. Probably nothing super interesting.
And of course, one of the biggest stars in Hollywood, Paul White, as Catherine Insano. You know, the giant. The big show.
Well, it's the big show. Well, it's the big, show
tonight. Okay. So I want to say that I really like Bobby Boucher, but I want to make it clear that I think I like more the idea of Bobby Boucher more than completely the
execution of it.
Yeah. I think, honestly, if you just got rid of, like, some of the grunts he made when he's tackling people and getting really angry, I think actually he would be okay with it. But, like, I think the character is very kind of interesting. I love how sweet-natured and friendly he is. I also like that he's clearly very intelligent, but just doesn't know anything because his mother has sheltered him. But yeah, he's clearly, I mean, like, he's easily the smartest person on his football team by country mile.
Yeah, the line about, like, I was like, you're the only one of us who could have passed that test, the GED. He's like, yeah, true words. Yeah, I, because, like, in the movie, like, he's essentially, quote-unquote, homeschooled, which essentially is his mom teaching him essentially nothing. But you have, like, early on these little glimpses of just, like, what an analytical mind he is. Well, like, first of all, the way he, like, deals with the water in the first place, like, and, like, how he purifies it and all this stuff, and, like, in the fancy football team, you have, like, these different canteens of distilled water, spring water, something else that was, like, also fancy, and it's, and all this stuff, and in like when Vicky is talking about like astrology and how like this person is a fraud. How like they're all like the astrology is very vague. It's like saying that you're gonna face a difficult decision today, and she's complaining about how vague that is. And he's like, well, you know, if maybe she keeps things vague and mysterious, then it's less likely that people will realize she's a phony. Which, like, she just kind of brushes off because she's not as that smart. And she's like, oh, well, whatever, you college boy, you. But, like, there's a lot of things that, like, it's very clear that, like, Bobby himself is a really smart guy. And you're right, that it's just, like, a matter of, like, well, he just hasn't gotten a chance to go to school.
Yeah, he's got a very bad stutter. He has clearly not talked to a lot of people in his life.
So, like, just like, yeah, not very socialized.
Yeah, and he knows nothing. But those last two things are, and maybe even the first thing too, all because his mother basically abused him for 31 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like the character, and like I said, in theory, like, I think he's, they keep saying he's simple. I really don't know if he's simple. I just think he's sheltered, super sheltered.
Yeah, I agree. But like I feel like that kind of language is just, I think it kind of goes along with, like, the energy and, like, the environment that they're in, to phrase it in that kind of way.
I just find him very fascinating. I kind of wish that we could have more than just this one film focusing on this character, because I would like to see him in other situations. Or, like, this would be a completely different film, but maybe I've seen him in, like, a situation where he's, like, globetrotting, or at least traveling across a country being... That's neither here nor there. So I'm bringing this up now because, like, the thing I think I like the least about this movie is also Bobby Boucher. And it's because I think that the character, as we described him, feels like a very positive portrayal of someone who might be neurodivergent. If he even counts as that, based off of, like, what we see in this film, he may or may not be. But the film does feel like it's just making fun of folks in that situation a lot of it. Like,
yeah, well, that was like 100%, like, when we talked about doing this in the last episode, and I was like, I'm not sure how this is gonna hold up. It was like it was the thing I was worried about, because, like, I am worried about the portrayal of Bobby. Like, that was in my mind just, like, going into rewatching this.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like the movie is like one, it's okay, let's say that, let's put something closer to my wheelhouse. I feel like a bit better I can express myself. Let's say this would be a movie about an inner city black kid who the movie can't decide if we're supposed to admire and respect the character, or think it's real funny that he's wearing a do-rag. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, look, he wears grills. Yeah, that's hilarious. How are those uptight suburbanites going to deal with this? Mm-hmm. Oh, they don't know nothing about hip-hop. Oh. And it's like, on the one hand, you can say, like, well, it's a basically positive portrayal. But then, like, on the other hand, the whole world seems to be throwing all sorts of bad language. I don't think it's treated with sophistication, probably because it was 1998. Right, like, if this movie was made today, I think it might be different. But, like, just some of the stuff that the football players say, man, the level of the just some of the stuff that most of the characters will say, because not just the football players, but even his mom says some pretty disheartening things about his intelligence. Mm-hmm. And so much of this is humor. Like, the joke isn't that we're laughing at these people for being prejudiced, like, rednecks. We're laughing because isn't it funny how dumb Bobby is? But also then they'll be like, but look how sweet and actually smart Bobby is. But look how dumb he is. Ha ha ha. And I feel like the movie doesn't quite know which side of the fence it wants to be on. Like, he's kind of jumping back and forth, and it's a little hard to watch.
And it also, like, I mean, it is also like a Hollywood trope. Considering the way that they're presenting him, it's also a Hollywood trope of, like, oh, we keep talking about him being quote-unquote simple-minded and blah, 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 but he's, like, the sweet, good-natured, quote-unquote simple-minded character, which is a different stereotype that happened a lot.
But again, he's not that simple-minded. It's like, he's actually very intelligent.
Well, yeah, yeah. But I'm just, so like, weird. Talking about, like, in the portrayal of him.
I get it. But my point is, like, that's how they kind of present him as, except that that's not what he is.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. Like, it's like one half of the movie thinks that's what he is. And, or maybe I should say, the movie thinks that's what he is, but the dialogue disagrees.
Mm.
So, I don't know. I had a bit of a hard time with it. Now, I also, I'm not sure if this is, like, just the nature of this movie. I don't want to, like, say, like, this is a super big problem with this film, but I do find it very perplexing just why so many people are just so viciously cruel to Bobby. It seems like it's just for no reason. Like, why is the original football team he works for so mean to him? Like, why is the coach so mean to him? He's literally doing nothing but making, like, an incredibly high-quality water for them to drink and just kind of sitting around.
Yeah, you know their water quality went down after they fired Bobby, but no one's willing to acknowledge it.
I just then, like, he goes to this new team, and he does nothing. Literally, all he does is set up the water. And the new team is like, oh, let's just pile on this guy. Let's just treat him like human garbage.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that part, like, that is a classic example. Like, people who face their own prejudice, who, like, put that aggression towards someone just to be above them. Like, they need someone to be above because they themselves have been oppressed so much that they then feel the need to find someone else to oppress. And this is like a classic thing that has happened a lot in the South when you have like the poor Bukra being extra, extra racist to black people because they themselves are oppressed and they feel like the people who are oppressing them are like, well, you know, at least you're not black. You should be worse to black people. And they're like, you know what? Fuck black people. You're right. And it feels like in that same kind of strain.
AKA the thing that literally happens with every immigrant group that comes to America.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I get it. But even so, it just seems like such a waste of energy. Especially the one guy who holds out. Because eventually the team switches their tune when they start winning. But then like, the one guy just won't let it go.
Yeah, because this movie is the way it is and like the characters are so one-dimensional, like you're gonna have a lot of this where it's just like people are behaving in a certain way just because it's like a plot dictates that he needs like someone to be mean to him, so I guess this guy's gonna be mean to him. We're not gonna really give him real good reason to be mean, but whatever, it's a plot point. And so like, yeah, hardly anyone has any kind of dimension to them.
Yeah, that's actually kind of segues into another issue I have with this movie, because I remember this film being, it's because I was young, right? I remember this film being having a little bit more depth than it actually does.
Mm-hmm.
And watching this, I realized just how much of it is paper thin and how many characters are paper thin. Like we can talk more about her and characters, but like Vicky, I remember being significantly more interesting than she actually is in this film. I think that she's very interesting on paper, but I didn't remember it takes us forever before she actually even gets into the movie. It's like what? It's like 20, 30 minutes before we ever see her?
Yeah, I actually kind of forgot that too, because like he mentions her fairly early on, but like, yeah, you don't see her until she's souping up his lawnmower.
Yeah, so he's already
on the
team. He's already on the team, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, basically, she doesn't show up for the first act at all, which is weird for a love interest. And she's got, okay, we can talk more about her and characters. I don't want to get too much into it. But, like, my point is, it's, like, a lot of things that seem kind of thin. And this is a comedy. And it's kind of an outrageous comedy, too. So I guess we shouldn't expect too much. But it does kind of, like, I guess we've seen better comedies that are a bit more depth to them in the last 15 years. And so going back to this, which still feels meatier than Sandler's earlier movies, honestly.
Yeah, sure.
But doesn't quite stand the test of time in that way. Like, I feel like I was watching a comedy that could have been a much better comedy if it had some major changes. Like, have Vicky on screen more, have us learn more stuff about her. Like, did they ever even mention what she was in jail for that she got out of?
Yeah. It seems like she's just, like, vaguely criminal. Like, she steals the Porsche. The cops show up, and she's like, I was with you from 2 a.m. to 4 or whatever. Don't forget to tell. Like, she's like, you just know that vaguely she is up to illegal things, but you don't quite know all the things that she's up to.
I like that. I love that that sequence. There's a lot of wasted potential in this movie all across the board. That's kind of what it boils down to. This could have been a sweeter movie. It could have been a funnier movie. It could have been a deeper movie. Like, I would have loved to see Coach Klein have more of a character arc that lasted throughout the whole movie as opposed to the last 10 minutes of the film. And I don't know. I kind of also kind of felt that the whole wrinkle of the high school thing seemed kind of pointless when there was another wrinkle with his mom faking being sick.
Yeah, I was like, considering how short this movie was and like having both of those roadblocks seemed like a lot, but yeah.
I don't know. Like, when I knew we were going to watch this movie, I was really hoping that this movie was going to be really good, but I was afraid that it might actually be really bad and hard to watch. And while it can be hard to watch, my biggest problem with the film, ultimately, as far as a film, it is just that this could be so much better. And that's a really bad thing to think about a movie that you liked a lot, like almost 30 years ago. 25 years ago? I don't really know where we're at.
Yeah, it's just like, it's wacky in that like late 90s kind of way, takes cheap shots at things that like you don't really appreciate in with a contemporary lens. Like, they do like multiple kind of like LGBT cheap shots with this movie. Like, then they're like short and not dwelled upon, just as like, I'm not feeling the conversation with like Bobby and the girls at the party, and like they're trying to get close to him because now he's like a football star, and since she's like, oh, you've been with a lot of girls, and he's like, and Bobby is not like catching on to like she means like dating and sleeping with a bunch of girls, and he's like, oh yeah, I've been with a lot of guys too, as in just interacted with girls and guys. And the other girl hears that, and you see her like wincing at the idea that he's been with a lot of guys and a lot of girls. And it goes on to like more jokes about him being with his mom and Coach Klein and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like the sequence with like Coach Klein, where like they're showing that he's had a mental breakdown and he's complaining to, and this is like, it's like the 70s. He's complaining to his mom.
This is a grandma.
Oh, sorry. He's complaining to his grandma on the phone about, Coach Boyu, and the camera pans down, you see that the cord is cut, he's not talking to anyone, and then you see that he's wearing high heels, like, which is a common gag where like the idea of like a man wearing like women's clothes is synonymous with like mental illness, and like the sight gag of like the two like sheriffs, like when Vicky's going around trying to collect people to have like a gathering for Bobby, and like you cut to like the two sheriffs in their cabin and they're like having a romantic dinner with their shirts off, which is just played for like a gag.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of funny, like you watch this in 2022, you're just like, oh, they're a couple. I had to remember that this is probably supposed to be a joke.
Exactly. And so like it just like when you're watching this stuff with your not 1998 eyes, you're just like, not really, not feeling this.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like there's a lot of low hanging fruit. That's low hanging fruit is kind of the this movie was before Happy Madison Productions, but that's typical Happy Madison production gag humor, you know. Mm-hmm. Not that not trying to defend it, just saying what it is.
Yeah, it's just saying that's their style.
Yeah. I feel like I might have more stuff to say in regards to characters, but is there anything else you want to mention about the movie itself before we move forward?
I don't know. It's a unique world, like, you know, the kind of aesthetic of things and like the like look of his home and stuff like that. Like it's definitely like more like interesting like visually than some of his other movies.
Yeah, that's true. Because a lot of his stuff is, let's be frank. Most of his movies take place in the quote unquote real world, where this is a cartoon version of the bio.
Yeah, and so like there is like you know, fun stuff there. Like when they dress up Mama's hospital room to look just like Holmes, like that shit looks cozy as fuck.
It's yeah. Like...
And in the gag about like what part of the snake they're eating, it's like, I mean, snakes don't really have paws, but if I were to guess, I would say you're eating his knee. Like it's funny.
I like the casual cuisine that Mama cooks, like those mini gators, like in the barbecue,
which Vicky is completely willing to just bite the head off of, Those giant potatoes. Did you notice that? That they always had a bowl of these like huge potatoes. Like because they didn't look like baked potatoes necessarily. They just looked like giant potatoes. I was just like, what's going on?
You know, God bless Mama for being self-sufficient, you know? Like her carbon footprint's probably very low.
That's true. That's true. Things to consider. Be more like Mama.
Well, no, Mama's
as far as ecology goes.
Yeah, be green like Mama, but don't be mean like Mama.
Don't
abuse your children.
Let them have friends and go to school.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let's talk about the characters. I don't know if we need to talk too much about Bobby Boucher at this point because we talked about him a lot. But I will say that just reiterate how against type Sandler is kind of playing in this. Compared to like all the movies surrounding this, not including The Wedding Singer, which I can't speak on, but I do appreciate that. And Sandler doesn't get a lot of opportunities in his career to play against type. And I would say most of the times that he does, when it's not a straight comedy, it has usually been met with heavy critique up until Uncut Gems, which is like 30 years after the fact, you know, but but usually when he's doing comedy, he's basically playing of one kind of role or himself in drag. So.
Oh, gosh, that was a movie, wasn't it?
Yes, Jack and Jill.
Right. Why? Why would anyone be like, let me pull out Eddie Murphy here? That seems to work out well.
But yeah, I want to talk a lot about Kathy Bates as Mama, Bobby's mother. Kathy Bates is basically good in everything she does, and she's great here. Like I think if you're just being like, oh, who has the best performance in this, it's her.
Yeah.
Far and away. I hadn't seen her in a ton of comedies, so I don't know if I would immediately think of her as being someone with good comedic timing, but she does pretty well here.
I remember like I had forgotten she's like when she tells the story about what really happened. No. When she tells the fake story about what happened to Bobby's dad, she like tells Coach Klein that he like died in the Peace Corps or whatever. But like she's telling the story, she's trying to be, you know, she's being serious about it. And she's like, back in 66, pick up sticks, and continues going. And I remember like always laughing so hard at that, like these like little things that like just give you pause, and it's just fun.
There's like a several examples of that throughout there. She's got a good delivery, but it's Kathy Bates. If she came and phoned it in, I think that would be the thing to really get emotional about. But she's great as she usually is. So yeah. Like I'm not sure what else I need to say. Like
she knows the assignment and she fucking does it because she's a professional.
Yes, yeah. That is 100% true. And I mean, I will say this. If she were to phone it in, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if this was a script she tossed in the garbage originally.
Yes.
You know? So, very professional.
It kind of makes me think of when, famous people, like older, famous actors find their way into, a Marvel movie. And they're they always have, the same reaction when people are like, so why are you in this? And they're like, I don't know. Fucking, it's a gig. A gig's a gig. I don't know. And, they all have, that same response.
Yeah, I think someone was asking Christian Bale what drew him to the MCU. And he was like, what the fuck is the MCU? However, I will say Mama is one of the most terrible characters, as far as just evil, really.
Yeah.
That I think we've ever seen in this film. It is, and in our podcast, the movie does not frame it this way. But Mama really is the villain of this film and gets no repercussions for her actions. Everything just works out great for her. And her character arc is that she's really upset about all this until she's not, which is not very interesting. But, she's an abusive parent.
And the idea that, she stops being abusive just because she sees that he's beloved, it seems to be the thing that changes her. She sees that, he's beloved by so many people, but he still chooses her over them. And it seems to be the thing that makes her be like, maybe I should stop abusing him. It's weird.
Like I said, the movie does not frame it as abuse. But it's complete and total abuse. She sheltered Bobby away from the world because she was upset about her own husband leaving her. And wouldn't let him have friends. Wouldn't let him go to school. She didn't educate him. The only thing she ever says is, this thing is bad because it's the devil. Although I will say that she's described as being extremely religious. I feel like just shouting that things are the devil doesn't make you religious.
Yeah. It's and there is no other example of it. It does. I work in multiple educational capacities, and I've had to do training about child safety and recognizing different types of child abuse. And this is textbook emotional abuse, and it's the keeping them sheltered and away from other people, not letting them go to school, all of this stuff, the right people been around when he was a kid, she would have 100% had to face a social worker on with all this stuff that she has done to him.
Yeah.
And could have easily ended with him being taken away from her.
Yeah. But the movie doesn't really frame it like that. First of all, it's a, the way, the type of comedy this is, a lot of this stuff is supposed to be taken as comedy. This is supposed to be funny. That's how funny when he asks his mom about Ben Franklin inventing electricity, she says she invented electricity, then Ben Franklin's the devil.
Yeah.
Although Ben Franklin didn't invent electricity either. That line has always bothered me.
It's touche. The small town school is also teaching them the wrong thing, but it's not that bad.
But then also her turnaround doesn't really feel earned, and then her whole personality changes once that happens, and it felt just so insincere and hollow because she went from I'm so obsessed with controlling my son that I will pretend to be in a coma to manipulate him into dropping out of school to let me tell you about your real father, now I'm 100% supportive of you and everything you want to do in the span of a night.
Yeah, and 100% all of a sudden fine with him, like, being with a woman and getting married and stuff, like, yeah, it's all a real quick turnaround.
I will say that we don't know how long after the last game
it takes. That actually happens. Yeah. Although, I gotta say, just because I forgot to mention this, but we were just talking about Kathy Bates herself. When they're doing the, like, when they're at the last game and Vicky is doing the interview with the sports guy, and Mama is in the background just doing a little dance.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to get on camera. I think that's my favorite part of the movie. I just love it so much. She's like doing like a little, she's practically doing a little Charleston in the background. It's so good.
Let's just be honest here. Kathy Bates plays two characters here. She plays Mama, and then she plays Helen Boucher. And Mama is a monstrous psychopath who, narcissist, who wants complete control over her son. And Helen Boucher is a very supportive mom who also wants to be on TV a little bit. Let's talk about Coach Klein really fast. Yeah, you know, I think you kind of said a lot of what needed to be said about Coach Klein, just even describing that scene with him having the mental break. I feel like the character is just the same as a lot of the other characters. Like, there seems like there's some interesting things there that doesn't get mined enough for me to actually feel as invested as I feel like I should be. Exactly what happened to his mind after what happened between him and Coach Red? Like, he's at some point, like, he's sitting on a football like it's an egg, and he's a bird mom or Horton. and Bobby's like, is he gonna be okay? And then, you know, Derek is like, oh yeah, he basically implies he does this all the time.
It is confusing considering what we see as the circumstances of what happens. Like, the idea that, like, Coach Boyu threatens to beat him up, and so he gives him the notebook, and that seems to be the end of it. And, like, and then, like, you know, he sees his career path get taken. I don't know how that leads to this strong of a, like, mental reaction. It feels like more, like, what are we not seeing about, like, what happens to him next that leads to, like, this, like, degradation of his reality? Like, it's, like, it's confusing.
I think we might be missing some context. If Coach Klein went from, like, 0 to negative 60 like that, basically think that he wasn't, you know, starting at 0 to begin with. Like, if that was the only reason that caused him from going from, like, perfectly normal person to hatching a football egg and weeping under his desk for 20 years.
Yeah.
I wish that the movie spent more time on that, on his background, because we don't really find out this stuff about him until, like, the climax of the film. And it's only within, like, the last few minutes that he seems to have a complete turnaround. I kind of wish that there was a bit more on, like, spent on that, because it kind of feels like unearned. Another thing, another change, it kind of feels a little unearned.
Yeah, and dear Hollywood, like, stop being so transphobic. Stop equating gender diversity for mental illness. Like, don't do that, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Fuck y'all.
Anything else about Coach Klein?
I just remember always hiding my poor sweet eyes when he'd show off his Roy Orbison tattoo.
Oh.
So it's just like, no, Jesus. And I would always.
Yeah, Henry Winkler wishes his butt looked that good.
I know. I was like, because, like, upon watching this, and I was just like, what was I, did I think it was his butt? Like clearly, like, it ain't him. Like, I don't know why I was so like, no.
No, his Henry Winkley butt.
Yeah, like, I don't, yeah, it's very silly. But I just remember, like, always.
Right,
I'm a sweet summer child. I should not see such things.
let's talk about Vicky, played by Feruza Balk. I want to just point out before we talk about the character that if I was 10 years older, I'm pretty sure Ferris Bulk would have been my lifetime crush.
Sure. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, except that she's a big believer. She seems to be a big believer in ghosts, which I don't care for.
She was too into the craft.
I mean, I think she has some reasons, including like a brother who passed away.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, neither here nor there. I remember Vicky being a really awesome part of this movie, and then I watched this movie last night and I realized she's actually doesn't do that much, and like everything else in this movie, completely underdeveloped.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like she did have more of a presence. I remembered her having more of a presence, I mean. And yeah, she's, I don't know, I felt like I used to think that she made more things happen.
Yeah.
But not really.
In fact, I think the only thing she makes happen, so to speak, is that she gets all those folks to show up at the hospital.
Yeah.
Which I guess does have an effect on Mama, but does not have an effect on Bobby.
Yeah. I'm sad that it takes for Mama to, like, you know, basically give him the okay to, like, I've changed my mind, you can be a person, for him to go back to Vicky. Like, I'm sad that he could not get there himself. Like, it still takes her permission for him to, like, date Vicky again. And, like, it's unfortunate. Like, it's unfortunate that, like, she herself and, like, the support that she gave him was not enough. And, like...
Yeah.
It really, like, cements that she is, like, literally his number two gal forever and always. And that's fine. And, like, that's all she is. She is a side character to his story. And it's just like, ugh, what a bummer.
The most unrealistic thing about this movie, honestly, is that Fairuza Balk heavily comes on to somebody, including taking her top off, and then that person still ends up rejecting her advances. Like, that's not real.
It's like, yeah, that scene, she shows him her boobs, and he's like, oh, I think Mama's awake, you better go. I'm not buying that. I am not buying that shit for a second.
Like, look, even if I was, like, a completely whipped Mama's boy the way Bobby was, I'm pretty sure I've been like, okay, look, where are you staying at? maybe it's just best not if we just find somewhere else.
I mean, they're surrounded by the bayou. Like, you know they must have, like, a hammock or something.
Oh,
like,
my God.
It's, yeah, you, at that point, you start problem solving and coming up with solutions.
Well, yeah, you figure it out. You figure it out. If Fairuza Balk is hitting on you in 1998, like, you figure something out. Also, important thing about her that I wanted to mention, the actress, is that she is in a movie that I would like us to watch one day, even though it is a movie that we did not grow up with at all. And that is Return to Oz.
I saw that. I saw that she was the Dorothy.
Just she's a Dorothy. And yeah. I saw that movie, and she is so little. She's such a little kid in that. It is, but she looks the same. She's got the same, like, large mouth.
Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because I was literally, like, before recording, I was, like, looking up pictures of that and The Worst Witch, which is the like next movie that she did as a kid, and like it is very funny. She is very much just a like a miniature version of herself.
Yeah. The best thing that Vicky does in this movie, and it's been memed. I've seen this meme on the internet a lot, is when she Bobby's taking the GED test or whatever it is. I don't think it's actually a GED test per se, but yeah, basically it is. But she goes in the window, she has that big sign, like, do you want me to kill them? And she's, like, mouthing it. Yeah. And I'm like, wow,
she has a sign.
Yeah, no, that's what she said. That's what I'm saying. She got the sign that says, do you want me to kill them? And he's like, he shakes his head, and then she's like, oh, okay. It gives a thumbs up. Like, I'm like, oh, what a supportive, violent girlfriend he has there. I would have liked to see a lot more of that in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, get you a girl who is willing to shank a guy, slit a dude's throat for you, you know?
Yeah. Actually, the idea of the sweet-natured Bobby and, like, the absolute ruthless, criminally-minded Vicky sounds like it actually could have a lot of entertainment value. Like, characters.
It's a fun dynamic. I agree.
You know what? It doesn't have to be Waterboy. Maybe I should write something with that dynamic. You know, write the stories you want to read, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. There's not a ton of characters that I think we need to go over, but we probably should touch on Jerry Reed, who plays the Bobby's first coach.
Oh, yeah. Red Bull U.
Yeah, Red Bull U. You know, Jerry Reed is actually more of a musician and singer than he is an actor, although he has been in a lot of movies.
Mm.
I don't have a lot to say about him. He's a very two-dimensional, one-dimensional, really, villain. Like, he's cruel for the sake of cruel.
Yeah.
He's a bully for the sake of being a bully. He's this weird combination of being completely egotistic and but also super insecure.
Yeah.
I like a lot of his facial expressions, especially when he's worried. Like in the scene where he's in the bar and he sees the story about Bobby playing football for the first time, and he's just like got this super expression of just like utter terror, and he's like clutching his his playbook like it's a teddy bear.
I don't have a whole lot to add to my opinion of him. I just remember as a kid, I was just like, wow, his eyes are so blue. He's an old guy. I don't find him attractive, but like he has beautiful blue eyes, and I'm sure that was a big selling point when he was this young musician.
Oh yeah, probably. There's a couple people I just want to touch on. I don't really have anything in depth to say about anyone else. Obviously, Paul White, who's you know, wrestling a superstar. I just want to point out, because Ariel, I'm not 100% certain if you're aware, because I don't know how much AEW you watch, but he has since left WWE and now works for AEW.
Oh, I did not know that.
He's primarily a commentator,
mm-hmm. Okay.
But he's an occasional wrestler. Sure. But the reason I didn't bring him up at all is because after he left WWE and when he signed with AEW, he apparently went to lengths to secure the copyright and trademark on Captain Insano.
Interesting.
So theoretically, as of right now, if Paul White wanted to wrestle as Captain Insano, he legally can. Also, the announcer who is with Captain Insano in that scene, he's actually a real wrestling announcer named Kevin Kelly, who's a very experienced guy. He's currently the American voice of New Japan Pro Wrestling.
I did recognize him as such. Like, I feel like this probably was more fresh in my mind when the movie, like when we were younger, but like I did recognize him as a real person and not just a...
Yeah, I think he was working at WWF at the time this movie came out, which is odd because they're clearly holding a WCW microphone. So I don't know about that. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of funny to know that Captain Insano could live again any day now.
Should we talk about the character Derek?
Yeah, I do want to talk about Derek. Actually, I don't have anything to talk about Derek. Derek is just the nice guy, but I will say that I'm not a big Walking Dead fan. But they introduce a character at some point. I think his name is Bob. And I kept thinking, like, why does this guy look familiar? Why is this guy? It bothered me for years. And then I watched this last night, and I'm like, holy shit, Derek Larry Gilliard Jr. is the guy from Walking Dead.
Well, the funny thing is, I had a similar-ish moment watching The Wire, because he's on The Wire. And I'm like, it's the dude from Waterboy.
So, I've never seen The Wire.
It's depressing. I don't know how black people get through it. I know it's very, very good. I started watching The Wire in 2020, and I had to stop because it made me too sad.
I've never heard of a black person liking The Wire. I've only heard of white people talking about how great The Wire is.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds about right. Because, like, it's just, it's depressing for black people, I think. It was depressing for me. So, yeah. I don't
know. Derek is fine. He's, like, the one person, aside from Vicky, who's nice to Bobby. But, like, just being nice to Bobby doesn't make you an interesting character. It just means that you are the only person in the movie who isn't insane.
Yeah.
Not good. Whatever. He's fine. I just want to mention Farmer Fran, Blake Clark, for a couple reasons. One, I always love the character that speaks in such a thick local accent that no one can understand them. Yeah. It's the same character. It's same character trope from Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, so you have Boomhauer from King of the Hill.
Yeah,
and then like you have Hot Fuzz because they're in the north, and I guess like the north is England's the south.
Yeah,
and so you have that same trope of that, you know, ridiculously heavy northern accent that no one can understand. Yes, it does always give me a giggle. But I remember, like, as a kid being really excited because I could recognize him saying, "We live to play another day."
Yeah. I that's like the only. I was watching this movie, and by the way, I had the subtitles on. The subtitles just said, "Speaks in Cajun accents," and so they didn't help me. But like, I was like, okay, this, I'm gonna listen really closely, and I bet I'll be able to figure out everything that he says this time. And I literally could only catch that part. A couple of things. Farmer Fran just as a great example of like this movie does not exist in the real world. It exists in a crazy ass hyper world. I find it not simply interesting that he has nipple rings, but in the last play, as everything's moving in slow motion and everyone's got these worried faces about whether or not the ball's going to make it into the end zone. And then they go to Farmer Fran and he's got his shirt off and he's just touching his nipples. So it's like, ah, so like it's just weirdly out of place. Like I like like one shot of somebody being weirdly out of place in there.
Yeah. It's great, unexpected absurdity.
Yeah, like that. But I also, the other thing I wanted to mention is just about Blake Clark. Blake Clark is the voice of Slinky Dog from the later Toy Story movies, as he took over the role from Jim Varney. And I mentioned that because I actually didn't know. I didn't realize that it was him. Like, I knew that Jim Varney had passed away. But if you had said Farmer Fran / Sean from Boy Meets World's dad.
Yeah.
Was the new voice of a Slinky Dog all these years. I wouldn't have been able to guess. I would have been like, what?
I did know that, but I'm not sure when I learned that, but like,
I was today years old.
Yeah. So like that I did know. And I do remember, cause like at the time this movie came out, like I would have only known him from Boy Meets World, and it is a an interesting contrast of characters. Pretty different situation.
Yeah, sure.
Although could Boy Meets World have used some Farmer Fran? And that'll mix things up a little bit.
I'm not 100% certain that Farmer Fran shouldn't just be the character that Blake Clark always plays, no matter what.
It's kind of like with like Catherine Tate, how she always brings back the character Nan again and again, and she like always has specials where she's playing this character. That could have been
Blake Clark's
thing. Just always bring it back, Farmer Fran, with some Farmer Fran specials.
He does bring the character back briefly in Joe Dirt,
which came out a couple years afterwards. Yes, you're right.
But not enough. Speaking of characters that come back, I just want to touch on this, and then we can move on because we are running a little long, and I don't think we need to go through. Most of the characters are just bullies who stop being bullies, or real life people who I don't know because I'm not a sportsman. But there's one person who I want to touch on specifically, and that is Rob Schneider, who plays the townie. Now the only reason I want to bring this up, because I would be very happy if we never have to talk about Rob Schneider on this podcast. Rob Schneider is a piece of shit. His political views are very upsetting, and he's very smug about them. He's in that Tim Allen section of of right-wing celebrity that I don't really want to hear about. But he plays this character who just basically, I don't know what his accent's supposed to be, but he says, "You can do it," a lot. And he plays the same character in Little Nicky, even though it's a different studio. And then Adam Sandler plays the same character in the Rob Schneider movie, The Animal.
What a bummer.
It's just a weird thing that I think we have to touch on if we're talking about Waterboy and Rob Schneider. Now, I don't have any plans on us doing Little Nicky or The Animal, so this will hopefully never come up again.
You know, this is another example, because, like, the you can do it thing sticks, and people do that for quite some time.
Yeah. You
know? And a similar... God,
it's even in an Offspring song.
Yeah, in a similar strain of, like, my wife, it was that kind of energy that people kept throwing out, that you can do it. And it's funny
I will, since you brought it up, I'm so glad you said that quote about my wife. It is, once you're married, it is very hard not to just do that all the time, I've found out. Like, it's all you want to do. It's just it all the time. No matter how many years ago. Thankfully, they made a new Borat movie. Since I've been married, so I've been able to do it without looking too outdated.
That's really the only reason Sacha Baron Cohen made a sequel, just trying to throw a bone to all the people with wives. But with the You Can Do It guy, the townie, considering how much that thing is prevalent in the zeitgeist after that movie, once again, he shows up like around the third act. He doesn't show up until like the party on the bayou, like the where it's like we're gonna be going to the Bourbon Bowl party, and then this gets, you know, crashed by the rival team, and so like that's near the end, and I was just like, God, considering, and he just does the You Can Do It like fucking like five times at that one scene, but like it is kind of funny this like. I feel like that was such a big thing, and he doesn't actually show up until near the end.
Yeah.
And makes it to the wedding. Yes, that's
yeah, stupid. Yeah, someone decided to invite him. And I don't think he... Yeah, I will say this. I do like when he... when Vicky has the football guy by the throat with a knife, and then the town is just like, you can do it! Cut his fucking head off!
Honestly, I do like also the, well, wake her ass up! We're going to win tomorrow! So he is fun when he's not saying you can do it.
Any other thoughts about this movie before we wrap up today's podcast? I know that you did not watch it as many times as you normally do, so I appreciate that if you don't have as much to say.
It does make me want some biscuits.
Oh, with some frog parts in it?
Not in that meal. Like, not like the weird, like little frog muffins. But when they're, like, eating... when they're eating the snake, honestly. Those biscuits that were just plain old biscuits as a side looked very good.
I was thinking about making some Cheddar Bay biscuits this weekend. Maybe I'll do that.
Oh, you do make good Cheddar Bay biscuits.
Okay, Ario, what would you give this film? A thumbs up, a thumbs down, a thumb somewhere in the middle.
I mean, I'd probably give it a thumbs down. Like, I'm not feeling it, you know? I'm not feeling it. I think the things that, like, are, like, good about it were, like, kind of things that, like, are good-ish, but we wish were better. And then, like, the things that I don't like about it, I'm just like, nah, I'm not into it. Like, so I'm going to go ahead and give it a thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be a little better. I'm going to give it a thumbs in the middle. Maybe a lower middle. I don't know. I feel like I came out of this movie feeling pretty neutral, which is really sad because of how much I loved this movie when I was a kid. But I just, you know, watching this now, just kind of, like you said, like, it could have been so much better. It's not where I'd like it to be. I can see this movie being made today being amazing. but what I'm looking at right now, just not quite it. Although, I wonder, this is a movie that does not get talked about a lot in Adam Sandler's like filmography compared to some of his other ones. I wonder if anyone's ever thinking about making like a decades later sequel of this movie, featuring like, I don't know, like the Waterboy's kid having an adventure.
It does sound something like something someone would have like brought up or.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing an adult Vicky Valancourt. Oh God. Speaking of adult, I mean, she's an adult in this movie, but speaking of like aged up people, God, you know how I can tell the passage of time makes fools of us all. Mm. Feroza Balk, she's starring in something right now where she's playing somebody's grandma.
Fucking what?
I don't know the complete details because it's a show that I am not really familiar with. It's called Paradise City. Yeah, as far as I can tell, she's the mother of like an actress in her early 20s who seems to have like a kid of her own.
Oh, gee, I thought you were going to say that, you know, she was like the mother of a teen. That's a bummer.
No.
that bums me out.
No, it's just like, and at first I was like, oh, that's not right. And then I thought about it, like, well, she's like 48. And that is old enough to have like a young adult child who may not have been as careful as they needed to be. And thus make the person under 50 a grandma. But somehow, knowing that the actress from The Craft, the actress from Return to Oz, is playing someone's grandma has really kind of made me feel like
That's still like bullshit Hollywood stuff, though. Like the fact that they're like, yeah, we'll make you a grandma. I mean, think about like fucking Dune, like you have like Timothée Chalamet, who was like born in like 96, and I'm pretty sure the woman who plays Jessica was born in like 81 or something. Like everything is bullshit.
Let's see here. So the person who plays this person is 22, born in 1999. Yeah, now this person was born the year after this movie was made. So this easily she could have easily be this person's daughter. Like she could be Bobby Boucher and Vicky's daughter.
Well, all right. There you go. Time makes fools of us all.
All right. So I think that's going to do it for us this week. As you might have noticed, our schedule is a little weird. I'm not sure if it's going to fix up, so I don't know when the next episode is going to come out. But Ariel and I did talk about what the next episode is going to be, and we have decided to revisit Disney. We are going to specifically look at the Disney kind of experimental era that happened after the Renaissance, but we're gonna not just go through everything like we did with the Renaissance. We're just picking a couple of movies that we know we want to revisit, and so that's gonna be a couple weeks of that, or a couple episodes of that, I should say. It might be a couple months of that, depending on how quickly I can get the episodes out. But I believe we are gonna start with possibly the most popular Disney film amongst everyone in our house growing up. That is The Emperor's New Groove. A movie so fucking complicated that not only do I have to rewatch the movie, I am going to have to watch an unauthorized documentary that is about this that's floating on the internet, because this movie is a lot. And this movie is going to feature some pettiness. I believe some Katzenberg pettiness might be involved in the creation of this film.
Sure.
we'll have to find out. I believe this movie started out as being something called The Emperor of the Sun, but I have to revisit this and have to like kind of double check and everything, because it's been a while since I looked at this stuff. But I'm very excited. This is not going to be a simple film. If we record less than 2 hours, I will be shocked. So I'm going to have to make sure that my wife is aware that it's going to be a long one.
I'm super excited. I mean, I've watched this movie as an adult multiple times. I'm still into it. And you know what? It's taken us too long to get some Eartha Kitt in the mix. So let's go.
I mean, I literally can only think of three things I've seen Eartha Kitt in, honestly. This, the Batman TV show, not even the movie, but the 1966 TV show, and Harriet the Spy, and that's about it.
Also Holes for me.
I didn't know she was in Holes.
Yeah, just Madame Zaroni. It's neither here nor there.
Okay. All right, we're going to take off. Email us at adultsiblingsversus@gmail.com. Our Twitter is adultversus. And we are on Facebook. Our theme song is Sell Out by Zombie Apocalypse Now from the EP Forbidden Tales of Science. You can find that and more at antizombierock.bandcamp.com. So Ariel, do you think that Bobby should have gone to jail when he attacked Colonel Sanders? And then the movie should have ended right there and then.
Yeah, holy shit. Wait for no one to be perturbed at all about that. He had a broken arm or something and in black eyes. Also, why was he at that party?
I guess the college is small enough that when you have a party, you basically invite the whole campus and they can all fit in the house.
It, like a legitimate wounded Professor Colonel Sanders is just like, I guess I'll get crunk with the students. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you should probably, I don't know, at least be brought up on charges, you know, like, let's you know, I guess.
How does he not get expelled? Is because he's just that powerful on the football team?
I mean, that seems to be the nature of things.
I mean, when you're seeing the coach alongside your mama, I guess you just have perks, if you know what I mean. Well, anyway, Ariel and I are going to go to the police to act as expert witnesses in what will surely be the trial of the century of Bobby Boucher versus Colonel Sanders. But until next time, as always, please do not put a dirty sock in your younger sibling's mouth.
The only thing better than a crawfish dinner is 5 crawfish dinner.
Hey, Ariel.
Hmm?
Not only does Gatorade quench your thirst better, it tastes better, too.
What? You don't mean that.
Gatorade.
H2O.
Gatorade.
H2O.
Water sucks. It really, really sucks. Water sucks. It really, really sucks.
Sucks. No! Use it on the field.